Hello, reader. You're plugged in to another episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. We hope you enjoy it.
Greetings and welcome to Jonathan Ball Publishers Podcast, where each week we sit down with authors of some of your favorite books and unpack the story behind the story, the emotions and the thoughts that go behind each word on the pages you and I cannot stop turning. And of course, we then uncap and go deeper into the meaning behind each word, each sentence, and of course, each paragraph. I'm, of course, the boss lady, Joy Fagude. Today, I'm joined by a multifaceted creative, award-winning podcaster, and the author of Journey Gwandu, Vusumusi Ngadani.
Ngande. Yes.
We're going to unpack the meaning of your surname because I think it's so important. But first and foremost, thank you so much for joining us on today's episode.
It is only a pleasure. Only a pleasure.
We look so forward to unpacking this book, which first and foremost, I must say, took me on quite the roller coaster.
Really?
Yes. Of emotions, of thought process, spiritually, intellectually, and also emotionally. Mm. It is a very beautiful book. And I want us to actually start here. One of the things this book has taught me is to sit down and unpack the meaning of words.
Yes.
So what does the word Gwandu mean, and why did you pick it for the book and even your own podcast?
Gwandu has actually a very in-depth meaning to it, and meaning in terms of within, I can say, African philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
But in its essence, Gwandu Ndu means basically the animating force of existence itself, right? Ndu would be what you would call God.
Mm-hmm.
In, if God was not like a conscious entity,
okay. You know,
it is that which God uses to bring things into existence. It's quite, like I said, it's quite a very involved definition.
Mm-hmm.
And Gwandu basically means, for me, it means home, right? Because for me, we are on a journey towards a particular point. And for me, that point is the essence of existence.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the essence of existence, and even within African philosophy, the essence of existence is the person, is Ndu, umuntu, motu. You know, so for me, that is what the importance of the word is in and of itself, and then within the work that I do.
Wow, that is very, very interesting. It brings me then to the first question that I have.
Yes.
Well, I already asked the first question, but a little bit deeper into it. And I'm going to read from page 77.
The book looks like a Bible now. Like
how so? Because I've highlighted everything and it has my little, what are these called? Little like
the
page markers.
Yes.
And everything's color-coded.
That is so interesting.
Okay. I can see that. Page 77, if you have your book with you, I'm going to read kind of where the next paragraph starts. It says, many of us who were born in urban townships, such as those in Gauteng, are generally cut off from any knowledge of our past. And I think this book deals with a great history. The bulk of it, the lion's share of it, is the history of South Africa, how we came about. And it breaks down things that I didn't know. So many things that I found so interesting that in a history lesson, I'd be like, oh, okay, ma'am, wrap it up. But the way you wrote here and the journey you take us on is so deep. Why was it important for you to first unpack that and lay it out for everyone to know first?
So when I first started the podcast, the thing that I was asking myself was, how did we get to believe the things that we believe in? Why do we have, because a lot of the time the conversations around spirituality is how-to conversations, like how to do this, how to do that. If you want to solve this particular, if you have a particular spiritual dilemma, this is how you deal with it. But my question is, why do we have that practice? You know, like, because people would say, no, if you know, this is how you pray, this is how you partner. And I'm like, why is it
like
that way? Why is it like that? What was the underlying reasoning between it? Because we can debate, there's a lot of debate about, you know, what is the right thing to do? What is the right spiritual approach to a thing? But my thing is, why are those the options that we have? You know what I mean? When we would say things like, you know, the man is the head of the household, you know, even spiritually. And I'm like, how did it become
get
that?
There, yes.
You know what I mean? Because
yeah.
There's a lot of things that we sort of take at face value to believe that that's just how things are, you know. And part of the big reason why the book ended up being largely focusing on history is like, because I have a deep interest in spirituality, with many of my questions, when I asked people, especially the older people, like, mm-hmm. why this, why that, they'll be like, that's how it was done in the old days.
Mm.
And my thing was, what are the old days?
Mm.
What do you mean by the old days? And the more I sort of dug in, I realized like when people say the old days, they actually mean a literally specific time frame, which was around about 200 years ago. But that's what they mean when they say olden days.
Whoa.
And my thing was, there was a time before that. And there was a time before that, and there was a time before that.
Mm.
And all of those things have had an influence into how things came to be. And the broader thing was, what I wanted to sort of emphasize is that nothing has been constant.
Mm.
You
yeah.
know, our beliefs have actually evolved
yes.
over time. And for me, I found that to be a very empowering aspect of history and spirituality, that because for me it feels like maybe actually as this current generation right now where we are,
mm-hmm.
we are actually not as lost as we think or we are made to feel that
yeah.
we are. Because if we are saying in the olden days, for example, was 200 years ago, one day 2025 is going to be 200 years ago.
Yes,
and yeah. those people, our descendants, are going to be looking to us to say, when they say the older people, our ancestors are talking about us.
Yes, they'll be referring to us.
Exactly.
Wow.
You know, so for me, I was like, okay, looking then into the history actually gives us so many tools to help us navigate the time that we're in.
We're in now.
Yeah.
It's so interesting that you point that out, because a lot of which, or rather, let me say, before reading this book, a lot of the times I always wandered through kind of thinking we're so far from what yes. was then.
Yes.
But you then realize that they did a certain thing during their time, and as they moved around, they
yes.
evolved
yes.
or became better or adapted. And we are finding ourselves in that space
precisely.
Where you're moving around, you're meeting new people, you're evolving, you're adapting. And that for me was so profound. And
yes. And for me, I think, you know, the reason I find this perspective or this way of looking at it helpful is that there's a lot of things happening right now which are, quite frankly, terrifying.
Mm.
You know, there's a lot of social, you know, political changes that
yeah.
are happening, technological changes that are happening all around us. And it feels like we're heading into this unknown, you know. And for me, when I look into the history, I'm like, we've actually been here before.
Yes.
Several times,
yeah.
actually. We've been in a point where, okay, we're heading into something that we actually don't know.
Mm.
And my focus, what I want or hope my work will be able to do, is to say, yes, we don't know, but we know that we will survive.
Yes.
You know, there will come something after this.
Mm-hmm.
And if we hold on with, you know, what we have now, we can actually work better next time.
Mm. Wow. You mentioned something a little bit earlier on about we've reached a point where the father is the leader or the head of the house spiritually, but also like in the physical.
Yes.
And a golden thread that I noticed upon reading the book was acknowledging or bringing forth the significance of women and femininity
yes.
into spirituality. Something
yes.
that for me was confusing, because in my reality, many of the cultural practices right now exclude women from
yeah.
it. And yet in the book, you point out how essential they are to it. In matter of fact, you dedicated the whole of chapter 7 to it,
yes.
a huge bulk of it, breaking it down. Why go about that? Why was it important for you to point out that, listen, this is where the role of femininity, and this is its importance, and this is how it helps you along your spiritual journey, understanding this?
Yeah. This goes back to part of the reason why I started my podcast in the first place. One of the reasons was that at the time when I started the podcast, the spirituality space was predominantly influenced by healers, mm-hmm. right? There was a lot of healers who had podcasts, yeah. had YouTube channels and all of those things. And the dynamic there was, this was an expert telling people who are less knowledgeable.
Yes.
You know, people who were experts in the topic in which they were dealing. Mm. And for me, every topic that I ever tackled was something that I didn't know about before the time. Mm. Because I'm not a healer, I'm not an expert in the subject matter, everything to me was new. What that meant was I did not have an intentional outcome to say, okay, I'm going to do this kind of a topic so that I can tell you this in the end. Mm. You know, I'm not going to tackle this because I want to prove this particular point to you.
Yeah.
And the reason why I'm explaining this is that the chapters in the book were not things that I intended to find.
Mm.
I did not intend to find the influence of women in spirituality.
Wow.
It was not my intent. I did not set out to say, okay, and now I'm going to focus on women and say, this is how. I did not know that. You know what I mean?
We're discovering, you are discovering as well.
Literally, yes. Yes. Wow. That's always been my philosophy. And for me, that's why it's called the journey.
Mm.
It's not just, you know, a journey that I'm proposing. This is me on this process, you know, of learning. So I do not set out to find the huge influence that women had in spirituality. It's a thing that I'm like, oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
That happened?
Yes.
And it happened like that?
Yeah.
That's shocking, you know? And I think for me, it creates this situation where you deal with spirituality more authentically, because you don't have these, you know, not to sort of to say, you know, I set out to prove a feminist theory or to disprove, which is a lot of the time we tackle issues with preconceived outcomes that we want. Like, no, you know, if you're going to talk about spirituality and women, it has to have this kind of outcome. Yeah. If you're going to deal with men in spirituality, it has to have this kind of a thing. Mm. And once you relinquish all those preconceived ideas, history becomes alive. You know, because you're like, actually, history does not have a side. So for me, to answer your question with women, for me, I found it so profound, you know, how the systematic way in which women were relegated.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the systematization of that in many ways was not necessarily intentional. You know, it was a thing that was circumstantial. Mm-hmm. So like in the book, I found that, you know, we've always believed that, you know, before, you know, patriarchy, there was matriarchy.
Yes.
And then you dig into like, actually, it's not that clear.
Yeah.
You know, matriarchy is actually a very rare thing.
Mm.
But what we have is these matrilineal societies where, you know, all the children belong to the mother's family and all of those things. And even then, I believe that there was also something that came before that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things, and for me, what emphasizes the importance of understanding evolution is that everything evolved, you know, everything evolved from something.
Yeah.
These matrilineal societies were also not necessarily the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, we've been through all these things. So I think what was important for me is finding out that women were actually far more in charge and involved in many of the most important spiritual, even leadership aspects of society. But even within that, it does not necessarily mean those are good societies.
Yes, yeah.
You know what I mean? Having a society that is led by women does not imply that everybody is free, everybody has equity, that everything, it's not a utopia.
Yeah,
it will still be riddled by its own realities.
Yes, yeah.
You know? So I think for me, that was important to have that very frank observation of the history, to say that just because there was a time that women were in a better position of power does not necessarily mean that there was a good society. And it's not something that we should necessarily be aspiring to, but it's something that we absolutely have to understand.
And learn from.
Yes.
Specifically so. Because I think my ideas prior to that, thinking of a matriarchy, you think, oh, it's the exact opposite of.
Yes.
But then you find that it has its own challenges, its own loopholes, and its own disadvantages to it. I must admit that I was profoundly hurt to learn that we fell at the feet of a cow, but it's fine. It's fine.
The
I
truth
understand.
Is the truth.
The truth is the truth. You mentioned that in discovering all of this, you yourself are on a journey. You yourself are learning. You didn't set out to find a specific thing. One of the things on your journey at the beginning thereof was that you set out to do was find your father and where he was. And you share with us on page 218 that it's been a 10-year spiritual journey. Today, is it still 10? I think now it's a little over 10.
Sure. I don't know if I should share this. I found my father.
The most emotional scene of the book. Okay, the first most emotional scene of the book. Yeah.
I have to think. I have to check if I can actually share this, because nobody knows this. Nobody knows this. Okay, so here's what happened. Right, a couple of weeks ago, I was hospitalized.
Mm-hmm.
Right. With a very potentially life-threatening condition.
Okay.
Right. And I got admitted into hospital, and I remember sitting in the parking lot of the hospital, and because the doctors had said that no, this condition is possibly something that is genetic, right? So in all likelihood, you got it from your dad, you know, so, but it's very, very serious and it's fatal.
Okay.
And I remember sitting in the parking lot, and I said to my dad, I'm like, dude, you know, I don't know where you are, you know, but I can't do this alone. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is frightening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like, I'm about to go in and be told I don't know what.
Yeah.
That, you know, my life could possibly be cut very, very short, you know. And I don't know who else to turn to. Mm. Because if what the doctors are saying is true, you know, this is me and you.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I can't do this alone.
Mm.
You have to do this with me. Okay,
yeah.
You have to walk into this hospital with me because I don't know what else to hold on to at this very moment, right?
Yeah.
So we go in, I get admitted, and you go to the ward, and it was really my first time in a hospital like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get admitted, and then there was a male nurse who helped me to check me in and did my, you know, as I was sitting on the bed showing me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm terrified, you know. And then there's a weird energy about him. He has a very gentle energy about him.
But nurse.
It's a male nurse. Okay. Oh, okay. I've never really encountered a male nurse, you know.
Okay.
And he sees that I'm quite nervous, you know. And you know, we crack jokes, you know. He's like, okay, this, he's like, do you have this condition? You have that? I'm like, nope. And he's like, he goes through a whole long list that you have to go through. Do you have high blood? Do you have this? Do you have, like, no. And I'm like, I do, and I'm just the person here. I have nothing. So we're laughing about it, and I'm sort of calming down, you know. I'm really, really calming down. And, you know, we spoke even about life in general.
Mm.
And then as we're talking, so my bed is like right next to the door of the ward.
Okay.
So there's another nurse who walks past, and the nurse, it's a lady, and then she shouts, "Hey, Prajo, you know, where's this and this and this?" You know, and then she asks again, "Prajo, where's this and this and this?" And then moment, like, my body just froze, right? Like, I just froze, you know. I just felt the blood leave my body. And the guy, the male nurse, he turns, and he answers the lady, like, no, here it is, the thing that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, thanks, Prajo. And I'm sitting there, so he turns back to me, and he just looks at me, and I'm just staring at him. My eyes are like, wide. He's like, why are you looking at me like that? And I'm like, Prajo is my father's name. Yeah.
What?
I'm sitting there, I'm like, I have tears in my eyes, bruh. I'm like, my dad came.
Whoa.
Like, my dad showed up. And he did the thing I asked him to do. Yeah. I'm like, dude, I'm scared.
And he was there.
You need to help me calm down.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm just sitting there, even now I'm getting teary.
And it's okay. Whoa.
You know, so I'm sitting there. He's like, I'm like, dude, what's your name? He's like, Jonas. I'm like, my father's name is Johannes.
Oh my goodness.
So so they call me Bracho. And I'm like, that's my dad's name. Everybody called my dad Bracho.
Whoa.
You know? And I remember sitting there, I'm like, I found my dad.
Whoa.
And like, I found my dad.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And the circumstance in which he showed up,
yes,
was so profound. You know, for him, yeah, to make his presence felt so deliberately in that moment.
And the way he assisted in the calming down of, like, just before.
And
everything.
After that, I never saw the guy again.
What?
He checked me in and he left, and I never saw him again for the entire duration of my stay in hospital. I never saw him again.
Oh my goodness.
You know? So I was like, wow. I remember the first thing that came to my, the question you're asking me,
yeah,
you know, the first thing came to me and was like, I found my dad. Because I remember the thing in the book where I'm like,
yes, you tell us about the dream life.
Yes, I'm looking for my dad.
Yeah.
And I remember, so he leaves and I'm sitting there and on the bed. I'm like, I found my dad.
Whoa.
I found my dad.
So we need like a extension of Journey to Gwandu Part 2, you know, like just a continuation.
Yeah, I think, you know what? I think the significance of that moment for me was that, because we're still doing, you know, the promotional work,
yeah,
for the book. So it's still quite fresh. I'm still getting questions around my father and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as you say, it's been a 10-year
journey mm-hmm,
you know, of me searching, you know. And even as I say in the book, I wasn't trying to find,
yes,
him as a person.
Yeah.
I just wanted to understand where he was,
yeah,
you know. And in many ways, this was the first time he ever communicated with me.
Wow.
You know,
yeah,
and you know, people would say, you know, no, spirit talks to you, and spirit talks,
yes,
to you, and like,
yeah,
you hear voices. I'm like, I didn't hear anything. Mm. That guy just showed up.
Mm, yeah,
you know, he just showed up, and he was there at that very moment. So, yeah.
Whoa. I was even referring to the part in the book where you tell us about the dreamlike valley,
yes,
and the spears that he,
yes,
throws, and the line that you're told that still sticks with you till today. But what you're sharing now with us, whoa.
Yeah.
That is beautiful. That is absolutely amazing. Was Journey Gwandu, in terms of the podcast, was he the inspiration behind it as well? Or what more so drew you to now putting your knowledge that you've accumulated and the journey that you're on onto paper? What was that inspiration?
To be honest, when I started, if I were to really peel back all the layers, mm-hmm, right? The Journey Gwandu actually started as a book many years ago.
Wow, okay.
Right, I want to say 2017.
Okay,
right?
Okay.
I had the idea that I would like to write a book about spirituality, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I started researching the book,
mm-hmm,
you know. I started researching, I started making notes. This was way before podcasts were like a thing.
Okay.
But I sort of got derailed from the book, because I felt like even this process of researching, I want to share that,
mm-hmm,
with people,
mm-hmm,
you know, which,
mm-hmm,
is partly what influenced the podcast. Mm-hmm. I was like, I want to share with people the stuff that I'm learning,
discovering,
you know.
Yeah.
So in many ways, it was really out of curiosity. But then what happens is that as the podcast was progressing,
mm-hmm,
you know, I started realizing that I wanted to ask myself deeper questions, right? I realized that there's certain topics I can't deal with in a podcast setting, because I can't ask one individual, you know, certain kinds of questions, especially if you want to dig deep into historical things. There are things that I have to verify. There are things that, you know, I need to find different sources for, you know. And more than anything, I want to dig deep. Sometimes when you're doing a podcast, you can't dig deep into certain things. In many, many ways, you have to keep it at like surface level, you know, especially for listeners and things like that. But I wanted, you know, an avenue whereby I could dig deep, you know, go into academic, go into history, understanding that, you know, when people engage with this work is going to be like, you know, in the privacy of their own homes, in your own time, in your own pace.
That is amazing. I want to still staying a little bit with your dad. Listen. Wow. Very impactful. Still, before we even get into chapter one, towards the end, you're telling us about the dreams that you're having, and you go for consultation, and the lady shares with you that that is your father trying to communicate with you. However, she says, and I read, the problem was that he is still young in the spirit world, so he has not yet learned how to communicate. And this was the first of many parts where I would just close the book and be like, huh?
Right.
What? Young in the spirit. Okay. And then as I read the book, you later share with us that he passed on when he was in his later 60s.
Yes, he was 68 when he passed on.
And then when I recall what you said to us at the beginning, still young in spirit, please expand and explain that to us, how we are, the spiritual is not detached from us, as you explain in the book. It's as dynamic an entity as ours is, happening along the same time. So then how am I young in the spirit?
Yeah. You know, ever since the book came out, and I've been reflecting, even now with this, I don't even know what to call it, incident with my father. Right now, you know, I've realized that I'm actually at such a different place, you know, and in terms of understanding spirituality, and that it's sort of made the next step in the work that I do more clear, in that these are actually now questions that I want to dig deep. These are questions that I want to now deal with about, you know, what is the actual structure of the ancestral realm? You know what I mean? So for me, to get to that question, being young in spirit means that you still have not adapted to how that world functions.
Okay.
You know, in the way, in the same way that when you come into the world, you have to learn how to walk, you have to learn how to talk, you have to, you know. Okay. So when you get to a specific, and it's not just entering the spirit realm in general, you know, when you enter a certain part of the spirit realm, you know, you have to develop certain capacities, like learning to talk, learning to communicate. Because when you're there, you're not necessarily also just a simple spirit entity. You know, you're going into there, and you're going to occupy a certain world. You're also going to occupy a certain function as spirit. You know what I mean? You're not, it's not just that, you know, you die and your soul comes out of your body and you are in heaven and whatever. You know, what I want to emphasize to people is that this, you know how in this world there's about, you know, we have human beings, but we have like, you know, tens of thousands of different species of animals. There's and not just that, we have, you know, the ocean, you know, where and living wood. Entities live, you know, we have forests, we have this and this and this. The spirit realm is just as complicated, even more so in my belief. You know what I mean? There are thousands of different dynamics and paradigms in which people exist in. You know, the same way as we have fish that live in water, we have birds that fly in the air. Even that side, there's different ways of existing, you know. So what happens when we die is that you enter a particular place, and when you enter that particular place, it's going to require you, if you are born in, as a human being, and you enter into this world, you have to learn a certain capacity of walking, which comes with two legs and two arms. When you're born as a fish, you have to come with a, you have to learn a certain kind of a capacity of movement and things like that. So when you pass over, depending on where you go, you also have to learn those capacities, you know. So where he was at the time, he had found himself where he now had to learn how to be in that body, if we can call it that, in that form that he is in. And he hadn't yet to learn how to walk, just like a child, he hasn't learned how to walk in this particular body and how to communicate. You know, even though he is still within it, You know, the same way as when you're born as a child, your spirit is in that body, but your spirit hasn't learned how to express itself because of the limitations that you haven't yet learned in that phase of your life.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. This is very interesting. I wanted to like make a joke about
the
wood, the different types of wood, because what happened is in the book he explains that he was trying to make a spear.
Yes.
And then you didn't know that a baseball bat is actually made of a certain type of wood that you then struggled so much through. Yes. But then you made these beautiful spears that you later discovered that is something that comes so naturally to you. Mm-hmm. Walk us through that dreamlike state or dreamland, as you called it in the book, and how that could possibly, not that you were having a near-death experience, but could we say that's a similarity to what individuals with a near-death experience feel, engage with, or see?
Let me put it this way. There's a term that's usually used when describing what is called the veil between this world and the world after, or the spirit world, you know. And my understanding is that there are certain periods, there are certain moments, there are certain processes that can thin the veil, right? They can make the you know, you have these, at your house you might have these blackout curtains that block out the whole sun.
Yeah.
And then, you know, at your mom's house you have the lace curtains, you know, where you can still see outside, but it's still a film, right? So for me, there are situations in which the veil between the worlds sort of thins, and the veil becomes more porous, where certain things can move, you know, messages can move more clearly, you know, intuition can move more clearly. And I found when I started making the spears, and what is important to emphasize is that I started making the spears during COVID. Right. So COVID necessarily wanted, or rather created, a space for lots of silence.
Yeah, slowing down.
Slowing down. So when I started, so I had like a little, I started a little workshop at my house at the back. And I realized that the more, I had this idea of a spear, right? And I struggled with it, and I struggled with it. And I'm like, I don't know, because I'm not necessarily that good with making things. For, you know, I'm a creative, yes, I could draw and all of those things. But this kind of a craft is something that is very new to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I don't have a trainer. I don't have anyone that I can ask. I can watch a few YouTube
videos
about, you know, but I can't, you know, I don't have a teacher. And I remember the moments where I really got frustrated with what I was doing, and I'm like, okay, maybe let's just slow down. Let's just slow down. And if you slow down enough while you're working, and you let go of what you're thinking, the work starts guiding itself. You know, the work starts guiding itself, and to a point where doing the work is actually not working, but it actually becomes a meditation.
Wow!
Right? And I was like, okay, the calmer I am, the better this thing actually turns out. You know, and for me, it was always interesting when I would look back at it. I'm like, wow, I didn't know I could do that. You know, and when I would show my family, they're like, wow, you did that? I'm like, yeah. And people would be like, how? I'm like, I don't know. You know what I mean? I can't tell you exactly how I got it to come out like this, having never done it before. But then it gave me a sense of, this is how, when you are in a particular state of mind, and then it thins the veil. And when the veil is thin, I don't hear things. You know, people would say, you know, nah, I hear, you know, this, people, you know, I heard this. I don't hear things. But I can, to some extent, I can sense things, you know. So when you're now working through just intuition and say, okay, I'll work with intuition. What's interesting about this is that I also realized that there was the same approach I needed to have with the podcast. right? And that I actually needed to approach the podcast in the same way that I was approaching that thing and not look at the podcast as this, you know, content platform.
Yeah.
I have to look at it as meditations on spirit, you know. And I remember one of the times where this was made very clear to me that, you know, I can say my guide sort of wanted to emphasize that the podcast is not a piece of content. This is spirit work, you know. And sometimes there are things that you're not ready for, you know. Because, for example, if you're going to have a podcast, you're going to say, okay, I want to do this topic, I want to do this topic,
I want to do this topic.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. And the reality is that when you're doing certain kind of work, when you're working with spirit, when you're doing spiritual work through things like that, there are some things you're not ready for. Yes, it's an interesting topic.
Yeah.
You can talk about it.
Yeah.
But you're not ready to deal with it in that particular way. You know? So I remember a couple of years ago, I wanted to do an episode on cleansing. You know, spiritual cleansing. It's a simple enough topic. Yes. Interesting enough.
Yeah.
You know? And I remember I interviewed this other Mkulu. And we set up the date and whatever. And how I do my podcast is that I come to you because I don't do studio. Earlier on, I realized like people speak so differently when they're in their own
element, in space,
in their own space, in their own homes. You are able to cultivate a far more intimate conversation than when you're doing in you know, studios, but I found out that that's really just how I function. I want people to be, you know,
as comfortable if
you want to be in your pajamas, you can just curl up on your couch.
Yeah.
We just curl up, you know, wherever it is. So I remember in this particular one, when we started talking, I set up the equipment and I started asking the questions, and I started getting very lightheaded.
Okay.
And I have to say that I'm not a person who, I'm not a spiritual person. Like, you know, I don't like, and then I felt spirit like, no. I don't have, I could try Wi-Fi, if that makes sense to anyone. You know, I'm really just an ordinary person in that sense. So I started feeling really like lightheaded. And I swear that I had an hour-long interview and I can't tell you what happened in the interview. Whoa. I started forgetting my questions. At some point, I forgot what it is that I was talking about, you know. And then the weirdest part was then I started feeling this cold in my feet. You know, my feet got very, very, very cold. It felt like my bones were going to break, you know. And I remember sitting having an interview with Mkulu, and then the next thing I'm at home.
Whoa.
I'm sleeping, you know. And I'm like, I don't know what happened. They're like, you arrived. This is midday on a weekend, and I just got into bed and I slept, you know. And it was weeks later when I realized that maybe actually shouldn't have dealt with that topic. That was not that
they needed.
Yes. And it became clear later on, like, oh, you know, you have to understand things in a different paradigm before you can deal with it. So even now when I was also doing the book, you know, I had to understand that, you know, there's different ways of approaching things, and there are certain things that now is not the time. And I don't know if my publicist is going to be mad at me, but they cut the book in half. Right. When I handed the manuscript in, it was literally cut into half. They're like, no, these are two books in one. And later on, I realized like, yeah, it's because, you know, there's a time for everything, you know. So even this knowledge, as necessary as it is now is not the time for that.
Wow.
Yeah.
There is so much that we can continue talking about. There is so many questions that one can have. And I think it is the time for you to definitely get your copy of Journey Gwandu and read it. But not only read it, but sit with it and engage with it. When something stands out to you, close the book, put a bookmarker. Don't be like me. But close the book and take a step away and really ask yourself, what does this mean for me, for my reality today? And you'll just see what happens from there. We'll catch you in the next one. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. Did you love what you heard? Don't just stop at the stories. Buy the books. Visit your favorite bookstore to grab your next read. And remember to subscribe, share, and join us again next week for more fascinating conversations. Until then, happy reading.